Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the don't nearly view system deal. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Hello and welcome to Stretford Paddock. This is a one-to-one interview and I'm joined by Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian, Jamie Jackson. How are you doing?
I've never been better, thank you. How are you?
Oh, that's great to hear. I'm very well as well, thank you. Obviously, last night's result, not particularly exciting when you wake up this morning, but you know, it seems to be some reasons to be optimistic, and hopefully you'll be able to elucidate us to any further reasons that we might think of. Get your comments in. This is live, of course, so get your comments in for Jamie, and we'll come to some of those later. But I've got a few of my own questions as well. So we'll go through some of the takeover stuff. We'll go through the latest with that. We'll look at some transfers. We'll look at Ten Hag as a coach and the work he's done and how you see it from your position as well. But let's start with that takeover stuff. So just to kind of get the overall view of it as it stands at the moment, the talk is of Q1 2023, this sale. So that would be the end of March, wouldn't it? January, February, March is Q1. The only official people that have come out and spoke publicly is Ineos and Jim Ratcliffe by extension. Where do you see things at the moment in terms of whether bids have been made by anyone or the talks have taken place? We've seen Avram Glazer in I think it was Dubai, wasn't he, reportedly talking to different potential owners from the Middle East. Where do things lie at the moment, and how fast do you see this sort of snowballing, as it were? Because, you know, we're nearly into February already, and it's only Ineos who have officially kind of come forward.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, this Q1 thing that you mentioned, you know, which is, as you say, by the end of March, that's that time frame. For them, or, yeah, for the spokesperson or spokesman for Jim Ratcliffe to come out, I think it was this week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Say we've formally sort of inserted ourselves into the process, I think it's significant. You wouldn't obviously say that if you felt, you know, we're not really too interested, or, you know, it's not something that they're really serious about. So it's interesting, the timing of that. I mean, you know, as you just say, you're looking at 2 months, 8 weeks until the end of March, really, maybe a little bit longer, actually. And so they are, Ineos, so Jim Ratcliffe, the only ones who have formally, as you said, you know, voice and interest. Beyond that, you know, you're looking at maybe, I don't know, sort of Middle East money, as you mentioned there, maybe an American consortium similar to the sort of one at Chelsea. But at the moment, and you just don't know with these things, and you know, we were talking before about why they've come out and said that.
Yeah.
It may be because to do with a shareholder thing, they have to sort of legally do this. Might be also to sort of say to the fan base, here we are, definitely. He's also obviously a local gentleman businessman, you know, Sir Jim Ratcliffe, he's from around here. But, you know, I heard or I read somewhere the other day that the reason why that might have some pull is it might sway the Glazers. I don't believe that. What will sway the Glazers at this price? I mean, you don't need me to say that. You know, what I'm trying to say is the fact that he's a local businessman is not going to make them go, okay, you're offering $1 billion less, we'll sell to you. But what I would say on that is if it does go to him in the end, I think then they will make a play of that. You know, the Glazers, they will then try and use that as like, you know, look at the safe hands, the local person. I mean, he is a fan. It's interesting. It's almost like going back, a throwback to the sort of, the 80s maybe, or maybe pre-Abramovich, where the local business person, you know, buys his or her boyhood, boy or girlhood. Yeah. You know what I mean? But this guy's obviously, I think he is Britain's richest person. So it's football. I would still be surprised if it happened by the end of Q1. Not because I think there's any necessary something going, you know, particularly difficult with this deal than others, but it seems like a really short amount of time. But you know, maybe it will occur. I think if you're then getting on towards the summer, causes problems for the transfer market.
The uncertainty there, because obviously, especially Ten Hag, and the passion out have left things late. but I don't see Ten Hag as the sort of person that wants to wait till August to start buying players. I think that he's obviously going to want to get that stuff and planned and scheduled and know what the budget is, you know, in the next couple of months, really.
And that's an interesting that you mentioned Ten Hag, because it's going to sound really ridiculous because he's being brilliant for you, but there's no guarantees he'll still be the manager. I think he still will be, but you've got to look at this. I mean, look at what happened to Tuchel at Chelsea. Mm. For whatever reason, he'd won them the Champions League, and he got sacked. What was it? You know, a few weeks into this season. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Ten Hag necessarily, but there is all this that's part of it. You know, will John Murtagh still be the football director? Will Darren Fletcher still be there as a technical director? You know, the chief executive whose name escapes me, Richard Arnold. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he maybe sort of is. So that's another reason why this has to be done. If you're, you know, it's the old thing. If you try to buy players, player A incoming needs to, well, you would think anyway, not all of them, but most of them, if they're smart, if they really care about the career, they're going to want to know where the club's going. So I think that's another reason why this deal needs to be done sort of before the end of Q1.
I think that would be a disaster if we got rid of Ten Hag.
Oh yeah,
100%. I guess you would agree, but just like
be a joke.
It would. But again, like you said, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Well, you just don't know who's coming in. This is the thing. Yeah. I don't think Sir Jim Ratcliffe, for example, is going to sack Ten Hag. Don't get me wrong, but you know, I think it would go the other way. I think you know.
Just on Ratcliffe, you mentioned there about him being a boyhood United fan, and I think he lived in Manchester until he was about 10 years old, and that, you know, like I said, it would kind of almost represent the old-fashioned way of doing football, where, you know, local businessman who did all right for himself buys his boyhood club. Obviously, this is a bigger scale and all of that, but do you think he's aware of his position as sort of, and I'm not you know, claiming that every fan would prefer Ratcliffe, but he seems to be the kind of the most typical choice that most people I speak to seem to want that. Do you think he knows that? Do you think he's sat there thinking, I could be the sort of saviour of this club and people want me to do that?
Yeah, I think he is aware of that. I mean, and this brings us on to another thing that's part of your question related to the answer is, you know, he made a late-ish, I don't know if bid, but certainly expressed an interest in buying Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
And at the time, I thought, that's interesting because he's supposed to have been at the Champions League final 99, you know, obviously the Solskjaer game. A die-hard Manchester United fan, apparently, and yet he's after buying Chelsea. Now, who knows what particular reason that he did that, because it was towards the late timing of Todd Boehly sort of being interested. But I think he must be aware of that. Or you know, he's a businessman, he's a smart person. Mm. And you'd like to think, I'd like to think, I've never asked him, obviously, but I'd like to think that, not the reason, but, you know, part of the reason why he wants to buy Manchester United is because of what we're discussing, that he does support the club. And if you look at it that way, it's actually, as long as if he was to buy and proves to be a good owner, it's actually a dream purchaser, isn't it? Because you've gone from these people, the Glazers.
that's a fair way of
putting it. Yeah, sure, the people. Yeah. You know, who aren't particularly liked, and I'm being polite, you know, to sort of, maybe the diametric opposite, a local person who, if you know, he has to get the club because he is a fan, and if he doesn't get the club, then to a certain extent, he's sort of sold a sort of, you know, not a particularly fair image of who he is and why he's after the club. So, you know, you might get lucky both ways here. You might get someone coming in. I mean, it's interesting with regard to the sort of amount of money he's got.
Yeah.
But this whole thing, and this includes the Glazers, about, the Glazers or owner A, whoever it is, or you know, whatever club, hasn't put their own money into a club. That doesn't really happen anyway. I mean, you know, that is a thing of the past. You understand what I'm getting at? So with Ratcliffe, you know, I've read stuff that maybe he's not quite as, a lot of his money's sort of like paper money, you know, it's investments, etc. But I wouldn't be too concerned about that because Manchester United, as we all know, you know, through these owners, is probably the best club in the world at generating its own income. It really is.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you look at, you know, I think they've just released a sort of money table again today or yesterday, and City are at the top of that now. But you look at who is sponsoring Manchester City, if you can even verify that these companies exist, which some of them don't even seem to. The ones that you can verify are almost all owned by the owners. So it's not necessarily a true reflection of the money making ability of Manchester City, but United are on that list, and we do make that money by ourselves. And I think that's a good point about, you know, there is an issue where, you know, I'm sure people would like the Glazers to spend some of their own money on Man United, But the biggest thing isn't that they don't spend their own money, it's that they take United's money out.
Yeah, yeah.
They put us in debt in the first place, and they steal from the club. Not that they don't put their own in. It's, you know, so all Jim Ratcliffe would have to do is not take dividends and ideally take us out of the debt. I mean, I think he would have to take us out of the debt. But he doesn't have to be like Abramovich did, or even like the City owners did, where they've, you know, one way or another managed to get their own money into the club. He would just have to let the club run the way it should be with good people in charge.
Yeah, and maybe actually because he wants to, not because maybe there's the European Super League and the protests outside Old Trafford, you know, connect with the fans. Mm. Listen, you're a fan, I'm not, but I'm guessing fans don't want to hear from the owners every day of the week. But what they want to feel like is that the owners kind of give a what's it, you know, with their hearts in the right place. And, you know, the stadium, I then move on to, because I think Old Trafford... Mm. Obviously, great history there, but it needs doing up, you know, a facelift, maybe a rebuild, however you want to describe it, because I know all clubs like this, but I almost think that, and Ten Hag's obviously the incumbent, but any Manchester United manager is not just managing the team,
no.
You know, he's managing sort of upwards. And what I mean by that is you've got owners there who are kind of absent, I would say. That, you know, I know they go to the odd game, but you understand what I mean. They're not like the heart and soul of the club, they're the opposite. And he's having to they have to manage that sort of, let's say, yeah, it's a toxic relationship, really, between the owners and the fans.
Oh, yeah.
The manager's in the middle, yeah. And you've got the stadium there that's almost an emblem of their sort of like, how can I say this again, being politely?
You don't need to be polite. No one will mind if you're not polite toward the Glazers, don't worry.
But I like to be polite. Maybe just not caring as much as they should. You know, I think Old Trafford, the fact that it's a bit run down, it's been patched up, there's a leaky roof.
They've left it to rot, basically, haven't they, for 20 years? 15,
yeah,
years.
They've never done any sort of structural work that wasn't, you know, there was obviously the new. Seats, but that was already, you know, commissioned before. So, yeah, I mean, as you say, Sir John Ratcliffe's just got to be sort of kind of opposite to all this.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like you said, I think he doesn't necessarily have to be this sort of hands-on everyday owner, but let's make it seem like someone that cares about the club owns it. That feels like a minimum requirement, doesn't it? Like, at least pretend to care. And the other thing as well that is worth mentioning, I think, is, you know, I believe he's a Manchester United fan. I don't think that's just some story whipped up to gain public favour. I believe that he is. He's also 70 years old. So if he doesn't buy Manchester United now, and let's say we'll move on to kind of, you know, the potential rumours with Saudi investment and parts of the UAE as well. But if he doesn't do this now, he probably never will. This is his. You know, assuming the next owners own it for even half the time that the Glazers have done, that will put him into his 80s before he gets a chance, another stab at this.
Yeah.
I would assume this is Jim Ratcliffe's last chance at this. Even just from a personal perspective, if he wants to have owned Man United one day, this is kind of now or never for him, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the process is still ongoing, but as you know, as we discussed, we only know about Sir Jim Ratcliffe as a concrete potential owner. So who knows what he might prove to be, but I get the feeling that... From Manchester United's point of view, the club, you know, the institution and the fans, as long as he is a decent sort of persona, etc., it feels like this is the big chance for you after sort of years of just like dismal sort of ownership and, you know, neglect, blah, blah, blah. So it's almost like all that sort of year of, sorry, those years of like, disappointment or however you want, you know, you're now going to get, not a reward, but it's now going to go the other way, hopefully.
Yeah.
I just, what's difficult is you just don't know what's coming down the track from other entities, you know, as you're saying.
Well, that's the thing. So if we move on to that a little bit, I think Dubai was the big one that's been mentioned that seems to sort of, again, because there's no public announcements the way Ineos have done, it's all rumour and it's all this
faceless
report and exclusive here and this there. And Saudi Arabia is another one that was mentioned a lot. But again, currently, the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, as they're known, but there's a lot of ties to the royal family there, already own Newcastle. Would they even be allowed to own another club in the Premier League?
That's a very interesting
question.
I did a story on this, but I think it was during the World Cup, because I think it was something like, I can't remember exactly, like, a government minister came out and said, if a private business entity or person, you know, from Saudi Arabia wants to buy Manchester United, that's the only way it can happen. But as we were discussing before, you know, it's called the Public Investment Fund, you know, so... And yet it seems to be that, you know, the Saudi royal family, which obviously... So, I'm not an expert on that country, but that seems the only way that would be.
Yeah.
And does a private person in Saudi who is not really the royal family have the sort of money to not only buy, because you made a very good point there, which I hadn't thought of. There's all this debt that United have, and you're taking that on as well, obviously, aren't you? You're not just buying the club. Now, obviously, any business person is going to say, well, you want 5 billion, you're half a billion in debt, whatever it is, knock that off. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or you want 6, let's make it. You know, that's what you think would happen. But, you know, when you're competing with, City, Newcastle, who are basically sort of government or country backed, more or less, however you want to describe it. Yeah. So people who can compete with that, or entities are very, they don't just grow on trees, obviously.
No.
And that's why, going back to Sir Jim Ratcliffe, you just wonder, he's British richest man. I'm not saying he's got the same level as, the Saudi Arabians or, Abu Dhabi or Qatar, but, he's a billionaire. It's almost like you need a billionaire. Mm. And here is one. I just still go back to this Chelsea thing. I just wonder why he did that at the time. It seemed a bit odd. If you are a true Manchester United fan, maybe he thought United wasn't going to come up for sale. Again, for 5-10 years, as you mentioned. But you think if he's properly tuned into this, it's a village. You'd think he would know what was coming down the track. It was only a few months later, obviously, that the Glazers have turned around and done this. So it's a little bit puzzling that
maybe he wanted to sort of understand the lay of the land when it comes to a takeover of this scale, see what boxes need ticking, see how this actually would work.
So get inside that deal, because
I was looking before, I think we checked this before, and you can correct me, producer Ethan, if I'm wrong on this. I think Chelsea, the first ever £1 billion football club. So before that, no club had ever been sold for a billion. And now we're looking at 4, 5, 6 billion for Man United. Maybe he just wanted to see the inner workings of a sort of sport franchise purchase of this scale, because it's never been done before.
Yeah,
until
it's a good point. He also owns Nice, which obviously not a £1 billion operation. And again, I've not done a lot of research on this, but it seems that it was sort of a mixed reaction to his ownership of that French club there.
Yeah, I don't think it's been all sort of sunshine and roses there by any means. But again, I don't know his day-to-day involvement with running Nice. I don't know who he brought in. Maybe that's something we should look into, obviously, if he becomes the front-runner. Yes. Before we carry on, we have teamed up with BetVictor.com to bring you their Pick 6 free-to-play game where you can win yourself £1,000. All you have to do is get a BetVictor account, make your 6 selections across the Premier League that weekend, and if you get all 6 right, you are in with a chance of winning the £1,000 prize. Right? The great thing is, you're also guaranteed a £20 bet if you get all 6 correct. It's that easy to play, and it is great fun as well. Terms and conditions apply. See on site for full details, and make sure you are 18 plus, be gamble aware, and always bet responsibly. Let's move on to transfers a bit, because obviously, regardless of who's the owner, you expect transfers to be taking place. Firstly, there's 12 days left of January. Do you expect any more movement this window?
Maybe some out of the club, maybe a couple of loans, but I can't really see a major signing. I mean, Walt Weghurst, with all the sort of respect that you're supposed to say in these matters, I think they only got him in because that's who they could afford. To be honest, I think it's quite a clever bit of business, considering, they had the money left over from Ronaldo's saved salary, whatever that is, 15 million, and they managed to pull out a guy who's had a good World Cup, knows the Premier League, but, it's a very small sample size, but looking at the game yesterday, watched it with my son, who is a United fan, it's easy to say, I'm not blaming him at all for the draw, don't get me wrong, but there was a couple of occasions where he looked a bit one-paced. I know he hasn't been bought for his pace, but what I'm saying is, what you really wanted was someone like Martial, who's fast, but maybe doesn't get injured all the time, to compete with him. So what I'm trying to say is, you never say never in football, but I'd be surprised if to a certain extent, it does depend on the Glazers. If they suddenly think, oh, we need a £35 million or 40, but even for that price, who are you going to get? So in terms of major outgoings, that might be the only way. But, if you now think of Luke Shaw as a centre-back, right, or possibly, you can play there, play well in the derby, obviously, then that makes Maguire, in my book, fifth choice. So I could see a scenario where they line up a player that ETH, Ten Hag wants, whatever it might be, a striker, I'd say. I don't know. And the Maguire gets sold on the basis that, that money is used. But other than that, I'm not so sure. So, it is basically sell to buy, I think, they're at in this month, in this January window.
Okay. Well, there was rumours. I mean, obviously, I wanted you to say we were getting Mbappe, but you didn't. And just on that, actually, in terms of, you say there about you know, Manchester United's number nine, and we've got very close to the end of the season. Looking at the summer transfer window, obviously, assuming there is a similar budget available to what we've seen over the last few years, you know, again, who knows what's going to happen with the owners, but let's assume things are roughly how they have been, and the lay of the land is similar to how it is now, for the sake of being able to even have this conversation. But like you said, Veikkausen is the sort of player that I think is a good sort of, you know, fill in the gaps type player. But realistically, if Man United want to be the best team in the world and the best team in England, we need to have a world-class striker there, not just someone that's not quite as good as Anthony Martial, who has, I think, scored 10 goals in the last two seasons. So, you know, I'm not going to say, obviously, Mbappe was a joke name thrown out there, but is there any way United could generate that sort of money? Because we're a big club, like I said, we generate money the way in very few other clubs do, but where is this money coming from? Because it seems to be a sell-to-buy thing in the summer as well, that with some reports we saw.
I mean, if you look back, in the time I've done this job, which is since the last but one of Ferguson's season, so 11 years now, you've always had quite a bit of money in the summer, right?
Yeah.
And last summer was, I think it was the record. So you could look at it this way. I think he probably wants two players at least. I think he probably wants another midfielder, like a proper midfielder, if I can put it that way, like a Casemiro quality, and yes, a striker. Say Jim Ratcliffe buys it, or another, there's going to be the money that you would normally have, in theory, you know, it's 150, 200 million. And then the new entity, person, whatever it is, might want to make a statement and say, all right, here you go, it's another 100. You know, you don't know, you might transform it, you might be in the market for Mbappe. I know it was a joke, but so if you think of Mbappe in your team, suddenly you just think, wow. And I know, you know, Real Madrid are after him, but what I'm trying to say is, why can't you be in that? I've always wondered, it's probably the answer is the Glazers, why you can't be in that bracket of going for the absolute, you know, because you generate the money. This debt thing is obviously having to be serviced, and they get paid a dividend, 15, 20 million a season, I think it is, between the sort of five or six siblings. So if all that was sorted out, I don't see, because you are in terms of generating your own money, the best, I'd say, but also commercially, you're a bit of a phenomenon. You know what I mean? You are massive.
I saw an article, and it's something that gets kind of brought up every so often, but players like, if you look sort of pre-Glazer, and buying players as a percentage of annual turnover,
right?
People like Varane and Rio Ferdinand and Yapstam, I think, or maybe it wasn't Yapstam, but certainly Varane and Ferdinand, would have cost the equivalent of like 120, 130, 150 million. Yeah. I think Varane would be the equivalent of 155 million pounds today. So we used to spend bigger then than we did now when you look at it as a percentage of how much the club's making. Do you think that is something that could change with new owners? Because and as a second question, sorry, because I need to ask you this before. Sure. I know you don't do, you know, the majority of work on Chelsea or any, but how are they doing what they're doing as well financially? How is that situation coming about?
Well, take the second question first. I think it's probably because there isn't that debt, you know, that you have. The owner is, I don't know, because it isn't as rich a club. It just isn't. But maybe there is some private money going into that. I actually don't. It's a very good question because. Yeah. They're after another player, aren't they?
Or, yeah, they want
who? Just have to get in the Ukrainian. So he's got the Ukrainian gentleman in Mudryk, and now they're after Casido, who looks a good player. I mean, it is interesting. They're almost like doing a Nottingham Forest, but obviously in massive scale in terms of can't stop buying. United, for me, I think the answer is the Glazers, I think you can. This is why it's exciting, maybe. If you get the right owner in, why can't you be with regard to the sort of riches spent, like Manchester City? I mean, the other thing is what's been an issue is that squad's been declining with bad buys, basically since Ferguson, you know, left. That there's a rebuild job on, so it's very difficult just to turn around one summer and say, right, we only want one or two players, let's go for, you know, Mbappe or whoever it may be, because we've got a service, a left back, a right back. The midfield's been decrepit for 20 years, blah, blah, blah. But he's starting to sort all that out. I mean, you know, I thought Casemiro was interesting. Spent all summer after De Jong.
Yeah.
We're going to get him. You know, we're confident. Didn't happen. Now, I don't know. You almost feel like under Solskjaer or even Mourinho, they wouldn't then have, because apparently that was it. But they then sort of, you lost those couple of games, and Casemiro, you know, they suddenly had 60 million. And I happened to ask him, what, you know, was Casemiro always on your list? You know, what happened there, kind of thing, in a press conference? His answer was sort of a mixture of like, I don't really want to answer it. And also maybe a wry smile, as if to say, I don't know, maybe the money did freshly become available because of the results. I don't know, maybe he's got something, Ten Hag. I'm not saying necessarily in his contract, but it almost seems like he was able to affect that budget thing, because we were being told, briefed, however you want to say it, that kind of the cupboard was bare, but then suddenly, you know.
It seems to happen every season, and we chat to people and we don't have the same sort of contacts as you, but there's certain people who we know who know things, and you hear things. And but going into last transfer window, like you said, last summer, it was like, there's not much money here, but don't be surprised if United don't make any big signings. And then all of a sudden there's 80 million for Antony that gets found, and Casemiro's another 60, and Martinez was 45, and Malassia was another 50. Like, there was 240 million quid spent in the end, which is, like you said, United's biggest ever transfer window. So none of it seems to make sense particularly, does it? Just as that sort of final thing, because just in terms of thinking about the money that was available, do you think if we'd have got De Jong, Casemiro would have been a no then, presumably?
I think so, yeah.
Surely not both.
Yeah, I think so. But you kind of need both, right? I think if you had both, a really good striker who's fast and can score lots of goals and stay fit, I think you'd be like, wow, it's a scary proposition. At the moment, he's doing obviously brilliant. That's what seemed to happen. It was only when the De Jong... he basically wanted him all summer. It might happen still, in the summer. When you say 240 million, that's obviously basically a quarter of £1 billion. Right? That's a lot of money, right? That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. You're spending all that, despite the debt, despite the Glazers being sort of semi-interested, however you want to describe it. So if you know what I mean? You can almost... If you're a United fan and you're looking for a glass half full scenario, you sort of almost be optimistic that, well, we're still able to do that sort of business despite the fact that we're £500 million in debt, we're having to service that. And so if someone comes in and sorts all that out...
Yeah. Because you look at Chelsea, and I think just to go through their arrival since 16-17 by season. So that year, I'm not going to go through the players, but just the amount spent.
Yeah.
So €132 million, which is roughly the same in pounds. Then the next season, 17-18, was €260 million, which is the same as United's biggest season ever. Then the one after that was €208 million.
Wow.
Then they had their transfer ban where they bought Mateo Kovacic somehow and spent €45 million. And then to make up for, a bit of a fallow year because of our transfer ban where we only bought one player, they spent €247 million. And then last season was €118 million. And then to make up for that, they've this season so far since the start of June, they've spent €425 million.
Is that how much it is?
That's how much they spent.
Oh, wow.
Wesley Fofana was £80 million. He's played about three games.
Wow, I didn't know it was quite that much.
So €425 million that they've spent.
Wow.
So when you think about that, like you said, there's no reason United couldn't find some money somewhere, or a new owner surely would be. It's an easy way to get the fans to like you as well, isn't it?
It is.
Unless you're doing just some sort of...
The other thing to say is, as long as this goes in the team, I don't think there's anything wrong with this. I think you could probably make a lot more money out of Manchester United. I think if you made Old Trafford like a destination venue that had like a cinema and some really nice shops and restaurants, and nice bars. That's what I'm saying. I don't mean like in a cheesy sort of plastic way, but actually really nice, done with a bit of class. Maybe turn the current Old Trafford into a museum, or use it for the women's football team, build it. You understand what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
I think there's opportunities there to really actually, I remember Woodward saying to me before, obviously before he left, a few years ago actually, that he thought there was no doubt it could be worth double figures, billions, Manchester United, at some point, 10 plus.
Yeah.
And I agree, I'm not a massive expert, but I just think common sense says that. Because you're doing all this with, as I say, a sort of neglected stadium, and you don't realise, you've got so much land around there. You know?
And you think about what sort of City's owners and how they've managed to develop the area around there. There's this new co-op live arena that's going up there as well, which I don't think they own, but that part of town, which used to be old factories and desolate, is now becoming, you might go there to spend your money elsewhere.
That's what
and
getting,
that at the minute United have done nothing. Even Hotel Football, which is right on the doorstep of Old Trafford, isn't owned by Manchester United.
I was staggered that the Glazers, supposedly smart business people, operators, didn't see allowed that to happen, if I can put it that way.
I think that's a good point of this United don't sort of lead the way in anything, do they? Unfortunately,
it's
all kind of lagging behind and waiting. So hopefully that can change. Let's move on to Ten Hag, because you spoke about him. Then you mentioned the job that he's doing. Last question on transfers. Is there any names in the summer that you think, you know, Kane has been mentioned, Rice has been mentioned in terms of the big players. Is there anything that you think is sort of a goer on either of those two? Or
well, I think there's interest definitely in Rice. Yeah. You know, if you ask me a slightly different question, well, it probably is the same question, him or De Jong, I'd say definitely Declan Rice. And Harry Kane, I don't know. I'm not too sure. I haven't done any massive digging on this, but I'm not too sure. He's quite a Ten Hag player. Maybe for some reason to do with the pace, basically. I'm not saying he's slow, but I think, you know. But yeah, I think De Jong will come back into it. Rice is interesting because I read that, you know, obviously Arsenal have made him number one target and Chelsea, he was out there. But I still think, and maybe I'm just a little bit biased because I cover the Manchester clubs, I still think, particularly United, it's a massive pull. It just is. It is the Real Madrid, or Real Madrid is the Manchester United of Spain, let me put it that way. And I think with what Ten Hag's doing, I think he's making a very good case for someone like Declan Rice to seriously consider. So I think they're more favourites, or got more of a chance of getting Declan Rice than maybe has been written about at the moment for these reasons. I really do.
Interesting. That'd be one to...
Would you like him there?
I would like him there. The more I see of Declan Rice, the more I like him. But then when I see Casemiro playing, I don't think he's as good as that. I don't think he's... I mean, look at what Casemiro's won. I know he'd have to be the best player ever to win that with West Ham. So I'm not knocking him for not winning five Champions Leagues at West Ham. But I think we've already got a player of that level. And maybe we could do with someone slightly more expansive next to him rather than, you know, more of a copy of Casemiro. I know they're not quite the same, and Declan Rice carries the ball better and all those things, but he's not a creative player by any means, is he, Declan Rice? I think there was mention in across some of the broadsheets as well yesterday that, like you mentioned there, Osimhen would maybe be preferred over Kane because of his pace. Is that what you...
I mean, how old is Kane now? He's about 29.
29,
so, I mean, if that deal was to be done, is it 100 million plus? Because if so,
it's got to be around that.
Would Ten Hag, Ten Hag really is driving it, really want to, you know, if you're going to go for a striker, I don't know. Listen, he's a very good footballer, Kane. He's not just a striker. You know, he's like a number 10 as well. Really good. But yeah, I also think, you know, kind of related to the Casemiro thing with Rice. Casemiro's 30, that's not his fault. And he's got at least 2 years at the very top, you know, maybe more. But he's that side of 30 now. And I just wondered with Osman, you know, whether they want a sort of younger, you know, who can grow into the team. I don't know. I just think he has sort of half solved the midfield problem. Yeah. And when I say half, only because you need two as good as Casemiro, I think.
And the other issue is Eriksen's 30. Yeah. So that's the one downside
good,
I see
to Kane. Good free signing him, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, amazing. That's the one downside I see to Harry Kane is if you get him, you've got Eriksen who's 30, Varane who's touching 30, Casemiro's the other side of 30, Kane who is about to be 30. You've basically got a win. Ten Hag's basically, you know, set a stopwatch on his own time at United there. Yeah. If you don't win anything in the next 3 years, he's probably going to... 2 years, he's probably going to be gone. So if you get Osimhen, you may be, you know, this is more of a rotating, constantly revolving team that can win things for longer.
I'm really interested to see what happens with Garnacho because he looks... And, you know, it can happen. Players can come in, even to Manchester United, which is obviously a big ask, and look really amazing. But he actually looks the most amazing of these youngsters who've come through for a while. I'd even suggest, it's a bit of a big call, but I know Rashford scored on his first games, but he looks, I'm going to say more, not better, but sort of more like more of a game breaker than Rashford. But as I say, he's only played a handful. But what I'm trying to say is that might solve a problem. I know he's not a centre forward, but Crumbs, if he can start scoring goals... Yeah. You know, he reminds me a little bit possibly of how of Ronaldo raw, but has, you know, Ronaldo obviously worked, you know, got the most out of it. Can Garnacho do that? Because he just, you know, the way he created that winner in the derby, he's 18, turns onto his left, you know what I mean?
He's just so direct and insistent.
He is direct, but he's also quite good with distribution. That's why I use that example, because he could have not panicked, but he could have just sort of done it with his right foot, but he sort of took his time, turned, and then made the right ball. And I think that's quite a good sign. So, I don't know. You know, as I say, my son's a United fan, and I think for him and any United fan, I'd be really excited at the moment because you're going to get hopefully good owners and you've got a great manager at last.
Hopefully, yeah. Well, on Ten Hag, just looking at some of the players that he's improved and how United have, even with the draw yesterday, it's a 10-game unbeaten run. 9 of those are wins. you couldn't ask for much more, really, in the last few months since those Brighton and Brentford losses. Start with Rashford, because you mentioned him there. I think he looked to me slightly unfit yesterday, and he looked like he picked up a knock against City, didn't it? But he's in certainly the best form of his career, and making the argument that at the moment maybe the best or most informed player in the world, I think since the World Cup, no one scored more goals than him. So how much do you put of that on Rashford and the way he's turned things around, or how much do you put it on the coaching and the culture change that Ten Hag's brought?
I think the player always has to take a lot of credit, but I don't think he didn't try, say, last season with Ranieri and Solskjaer. So I go to what's changed. It's the manager, right? There is an X factor, I really think. And, you know, Luke Shaw moving across from left back to centre back and looking at really, you know, really good player there. So, yeah, I think Rashford, so interesting, because if I remember rightly, I even think he might have started off this season looking a little bit, you know, he needed some confidence. And he's just become... What I love about it is you always felt he could do this. Yeah. Almost be like Thierry Henry, that sort of striker, really fast, you know, sort of direct scoring. But he never really has done it consistently. But now he looks the real deal. Can he keep it up? What is he, 25, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So, you know, he's got his best years ahead of him. I think with this manager, I think he's probably, you know, hit goal. But this is kind of what managers pay to do, right? Not you know, they've got to do lots of things, but basically it's get the best out of players, but also improve them. You know, Wan-Bissaka is another example.
Yeah, well, that's one I was going to come on to.
Part of it also is it's what you do with the player, but it's also if you're coming into a team that's functioning well and knows what it's doing, you can almost, like, within reason, change whatever position, right? You know, that's what Guardiola's done so well. Got this winning machine.
That's what Ferguson did.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of the teams that he won big games almost laughable.
You tell me your last title wasn't the greatest United, you know, that you won, wasn't the greatest United team. But, you know, I think Ten Hag is a bit of a operator on the training ground. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think he's really a brilliant man manager, good with the media. It was interesting because when he started off, there was all this, can he speak enough? How's his English? You know, is he good with his English? And what I noticed was, I first thought, his very first press conference was, his English isn't that good. But then I realised it's just his accent. And actually what he says is actually quite interesting. He's smart. Yeah. And I know people might say, what does it matter? But I think it does. I think all the top ones are good with the media. And when I say good, I don't mean like they help us out. I just mean that they're in control. They're smart. They see what's coming. Mm. They know how to use it. I know that sounds all obvious, but not all of them are like that. I felt like Solskjaer sometimes didn't do himself many favours just because he was such a nice guy, and that was kind of the way he was a little bit of a little bit naive, maybe. Whereas this guy, you know, he's got that going for him as well. Mm. So I mean, you know, Rashford, Wan-Bissaka, Luke Shaw, you know, we could go through the team. Martial was out. Yeah, De Gea. Although that goal where he let through his legs wasn't great, was it?
Yeah, that was leaning against the post like he was had a few pints in him. Yeah, that
was Martial was out on loan last season, right? Yeah. I mean, he really rates him. So, in a way, it's not rocket science, but, you know, getting in a top manager, but it seems to have been difficult for United. I mean, this midfield thing is hilarious. You had Scholes and Carrick, and then that was it for like 15 years, right? Yeah. You know, in terms of a proper player there. How can that be at Manchester United? It just seems odd.
We've really sort of skipped through some poor decisions and people, you know, Schweinsteiger too late and Schneiderlin wasn't right. And then Fellaini and Herrera, Pogba didn't work out.
Fellaini's at a low point.
Yeah, that was a bad transfer window. Maybe we still got the money left over from only buying Fellaini that year. I just wanted to mention as well, about you were talking there about how Ten Hag has improved players and his English and how that comes across in the media. I know that it's obviously, well, I don't know, I'm not speaking for you, but you like to think that the media are kind of unbiased and approach it with give everyone the same respect. But it does make a difference, doesn't it, when, you know, a manager seems to hold himself a certain way and seems to have that confidence. And I do think he is written about differently. I know his results have been excellent, but I do think that, you know, someone like Solskjaer, Moyes was the perfect example of minute one, he's not cut out for this. He looks like he's won a competition. And that's how he was written about. And I do think that changes social media agendas, and it changes what you read in the papers. And I think eventually that can hurt managers.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. Winning means you really can say what you like. But more, you know, how do you win? Well, you get it right on the training ground and obviously on match day. But also part of that is you know, how you come across in the media is obviously reflecting how you are with the players, you know, behind closed doors, how you talk to them, how they relate to you, do they respect you? And Moyes is a great, you know, I remember a classic one. what was it? It was something to do, I think you were playing Liverpool at your place, and, he basically said Liverpool are favourites. Now that was obviously true, but. Who wants to hear that?
Also, we were reigning champions then. When Moyes was the manager, we were reigning. It wasn't like or last season when Liverpool got 90 odd points.
Exactly. It is important. You know, Ten Hag as well. It makes a difference to me. This everyone's different, but I do actually think he's a nice guy. You don't have to be a nice guy to be a top manager, but I think I like him, and I suppose I sort of like them all. But Mourinho, I was a little bit ambivalent. I'm being polite about him. I didn't think his heart was in it, to be honest, at all. No. Whereas I think Ten Hag really, really. It was interesting. There was a Casemiro quote last week saying he's the manager he's had who's wants to win the most, which is interesting considering he's come from Real Madrid, which is an absolute winning machine. You know, I thought obviously you would expect that of all managers, or you should do anyway. But it was like almost, you know, like it ruins his sort of next three or four days if he doesn't win, and you know. He should look like this, but when the goal went in at Palace yesterday, he cut to him and he looked a combination of fuming and absolutely cheesed off when he walked off afterwards. But that's, you know, he should feel like that. And for Casemiro to... The other thing about Ten Hag is he wasn't a big player, was he, right?
No.
So he's obviously got some sort of aura, mystique, whatever you want to call it, for a player like Casemiro to think, I want to play for this guy, you know.
Yeah, and he's got that feeling as well that if things went well... I could see him being here for a long time.
Definitely.
Whereas Jose, you knew that wasn't the case.
He was in the Lowry, wasn't he, all the time?
Yeah, exactly. He's basically like on a rolling contract, Jose, and wherever he goes, because you can sign him 1 year, 2 year, 3 years. Once it starts to blow up, he's gone in 2 months. Whereas Ten Hag, I generally get that feeling that maybe it's because it's his first job at like a mega team. I know Ajax have got a great history, terms of revenue and the sort of stuff they've won over the last sort of 20 years. He's never been at a club as the scale of Man United. And I wonder if he's got that, still got something to prove. Whereas Jose, proving everything you can.
Yeah.
You know, basically all I'm doing now is extending the miles on the clock. Ten Hag's got something extra.
Let's not forget, it's worth going back over. Ten Hag walked into a bit of a mess, right? Yeah. You know, you were nowhere last season. You know, if you don't mind me saying, you were a bit of a joke. I'm not being nasty, but you were.
As United fans, I think we'd all admit
okay,
that.
Okay, so he's walked into season, that. Yeah. He's walked into a Ronaldo thing where he wants to leave.
Yeah.
And you lose the first two games, not really his fault, he's tried his best, but he's lost the first two games. That game at Brentford wasn't great. And then look where you are now. You know, it doesn't just happen like that. He's got to have some sort of skill or talent, and it's being shown. I mean, you know, you have to caveat because it's football and they could lose sort of 500-0 the next game, but he probably is the best signing, I think, since Ferguson left, like player or manager. He's got to be, right? You're looking at it thinking... Because, you know, without a good manager, you can forget about the rest of it, right?
Yeah, great. Yeah, and do you know what? I think that's a great place to end this. Ten Hag is the best signing since Fergie. You heard it here first. Thank you for coming on, Jamie. Honestly, absolutely love chatting to you as always. Make sure you go and check Jamie out at The Guardian on social media as well. We'll get the links to all of his stuff in there. Thank you for joining us at home. This has been the one-to-one interview with Jamie Jackson. Hit subscribe if you haven't already, and we'll see you in a bit.
Sports Social Podcast Network.